Welcome to the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling and the Latest Podcast. I'm your host, JP John Paz. With me today is the former WWE World Heavyweight Champion. He is the former head writer for the WWF, Mr. Vince Russo. Vince, how you doing today, sir?
I am doing all right.
Ground Zero, the WWF pay-per-view from 1997. Of course, it was September 7th from Louisville, Kentucky at the Louisville Gardens venue. The attendance was only 4,963, so under 5,000, very small. And the pay-per-view buy rate was 136K. The tagline is, that's the bottom line. So not a good attendance and not a good buy rate.
I swear to God, John, when you tell me those pay-per-view buys, it blows my mind, bro, because I remember Vince telling me in confidence going into WrestleMania 14, he said, Vince, we need to do 1 million buys. And when I'm looking at where we are in September, and he wants to do a million buys in March? Because if I would have realized that, I would have told him he was out of his mind. John, I swear, when I was working for them, I didn't know what the pay-per-view buys were. That really had no effect on me. I mean, I had to, you know, write the television shows from week to week to week to week. So I never really knew what the pay-per-view buys were. I just remember that.
Wow. That was wishful thinking. I mean, you guys do 750,000 for WrestleMania 14, so or around that number. So, I mean, it was a really good pay-per-view buy. Was he happy at least with that?
I mean, bro, if he had his sights set on a million, he was not happy with 750.
But, yeah. Man, from here, I know this is a small pay-per-view here, but 136, then you could jump up to 750. It's a
That's crazy, lead. Bro. That is crazy.
The tagline is, that's the bottom line. Steve Austin won't be in it because Austin got injured from Owen Hart with the broken neck. So I guess the pay-per-view, I mean, you just got to go with it. It's been called that for a while.
Oh, yeah, bro. That a lot of people don't understand that. Bro, Creative Services, they're doing all the art and everything 3 months prior.
WWE was like the master of marketing stuff. Their creative services department, like, I mean, that's got to be the biggest you've ever seen, right?
As far as where you awesome. Bro, they worked right next to me, but they were next to publication. So I was very tight with a lot of those people. They were tremendous, bro. They were great.
Any names we would recognize from creative services?
Not really, bro. Not really. But they were, bro, it's funny because right next to my office, if Pritchard had the idea for a new character, he would go to this woman and now she would draw it up. So I would always sneak in her office, bro, when she wasn't there to see what characters were coming up, right? She never knew it.
Yep.
And bro, I'll never forget, man, the day I went in there and the character was on her desk. They were going to do who and what, bro. And I was like,
Jesus Christ.
Exactly, bro. I was like, well, bro, who's not enough? You're really going to do what? Oh, my God, bro.
That was terrible. And the little jokes that go with it were terrible. Everything about it was terrible. Yeah.
I still never fully got this, but, you know, I know you're a Hogan guy, big.
Yep.
Bro, this was supposed to be like some kind of a poke fun at Hogan. Did you know that?
No. Nope.
Yeah, but I never really like understood why, but this was supposed to be some kind of a dig at Hogan.
Wow, I had never heard that, and I don't even understand how it could be or what it could be.
I don't
be.
Either, bro, but I know that's what it was, but some kind of an inside joke they had, I guess.
I love that Vince is like, at this point, like anti-Hogan. He's the only reason even like we're surviving or had your money. He literally put you on the map.
That's funny, bro, because Vince was personally hurt that Hogan left. But at the time, bro, I remember because I was there. Vince wanted Hogan to be the Babe Ruth of the WWE. Hogan felt like he had more in the tank. So why would you be upset with that? That's why Hogan went to WCW. He still wanted to wrestle. He still had a lot more. Vince thought he was way past his prime of wrestling. So when the guy leaves, why are you going to take that personally? You know?
Weird. And then 10 years later, 2002, he's main eventing WrestleMania against The Rock and had the best match of the night. So
yeah.
Vince was dead wrong. So here for Ground Zero, the whole buildup is Michaels and Undertaker, because of what happened at SummerSlam, Michaels hit him over the head with a chair by accident. So kind of leads you to the next feud. So it's really building up between these two, between Michaels and Undertaker, who really hadn't had a match or feuded before this, even though they were both in the WWF for, you know, many, many years prior to this together.
This is what I loved about Shawn, man. I remember promos between these two where Shawn would like stand right up to him. You know, it wasn't that chicken shit heel bullshit. It was like somewhere in the back of his mind, Shawn really thought he could take Taker. I don't want to take credit for it, but I am anti chicken shit heel, because my philosophy is this. If you are a chicken shit heel and you're running away from everybody, why are you in the wrestling business? You choose the wrong profession, obviously. So I always used to make it where Shawn would go toe to toe with Taker, like promo wise. And man, I thought that was some really good stuff, bro.
The funny thing is, it's like, okay, the chair shot, Michaels is a babyface. That was by accident. But leading into this show, he then hits him again on a Raw, twice in the head on purpose. So it's like, okay. And you could tell the crowd, which has always kind of been the case with Michaels, they're always kind of 50-50, like that John Cena thing we had talked about previously. Like the crowd's 50-50. Like there's some fans that don't like him, and they started getting more vocal. They really don't like him here, yeah. But he's doing it on purpose. He basically is strongly turning heel here.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
It just seemed like it fit him more in this era that he'd be a natural asshole.
Yeah, and he was that way, bro. Yeah. And listen, it was a different time for Shawn, because he was, you know, that's not the Shawn you got today. So it was a very rough period for him. But yeah, bro, backstage, he was a dick.
Why did it take Shawn Michaels and Undertaker so long to have matches? I mean, they were in the WWF forever together for a long time. They could have had a feud maybe in 1993, but what took them so long?
Taker makes no bones about it. Like, he didn't like Shawn at the time. And I guarantee you, for a long time, he did not want to work with Shawn. Guaranteed.
The other feud that's going on here is Bret Hart versus the Patriot for the WWF world title. Kind of is like the secondary feud. Do you like the world title being secondary?
Bro, in this case, like, Patriot's just not marquee. It shouldn't be, John. I mean, what you're saying is absolutely right. It shouldn't be. But, my bro, you're not going to make Bret and the Patriots stronger than Shawn and Taker. You're just not, bro.
Leading up to SummerSlam, Bret wins the title. Michaels had distracted Bret on a Raw. It was a week before the SummerSlam pay-per-view, and Patriot got a fluke victory over Bret. So he got a win, so a month later or whatever, but still it enables him to get a title shot, because he pinned Bret. He pinned the champ. It's leading himself into a title shot. So it does make sense of him getting a title shot, but you're right. It doesn't feel like it's the headliner.
Yeah. And, bro, I, Del Wilkes was such a cool dude. Like, Bret probably had no problem doing that whatsoever, because he was a really good guy, bro.
Love Del. Always liked him. Years ago, we helped executive produce his documentary that came out. It's a 3-disc set by my buddy Michael Elliott at Elbow Productions.
Awesome.
Like, really, really good stuff. And he went into his football career, his drug use, his jail time. I mean, really went in depth in his career. I mean, his stuff in Japan was just awesome.
Yeah,
but
it
caused so many injuries. So quite an interesting life for Del Wilkes, the Patriot here. And main event feud against Bret, but, you know, kind of the secondary main event, just behind the main event. With this, though, where are you here? I know we've talked about, like, are you getting more power back?
Oh, yeah. With every pay-per-view, I'm getting more and more and more involved. And, bro, part of my power, too, like, a lot of it came, bro. I'm very, very bad with timelines. When J.J. Dillon was talent relations, Pritchard and Cornette were doing the writing. J.J. Dillon went to WCW. Bruce wanted that job and got that job. And that's when I really slipped into the full-time Bruce, not even a part of it, creative. Vince puts me in Bruce's spot of the writing TV. So it was Vince, me, and Cornette for a while. Bro, something happened there. I don't know what happened, bro, but Bruce did not last in that position long. And I don't know what happened. To this day, bro, I don't know what happened, but it's almost like as quickly as he was in there, he was out. That's when JR took over. Yep. Now Bruce is in no man's land. And now Bruce started like politicking behind my back to get his spot back. Debbie Bonanzio, bro, used to run Creative Services. Creative Services is where they come up with all the pay-per-view campaigns and the marketing, but they also come up with designs for new characters, what characters are going to look like, what they're going to wear. Creative Services, bro, was right next to the publications department. So I had a great relationship with everybody in Creative Services. I worked right next to them for years. So I'll never forget, bro, I was in Bruce's office once. And he said to me, Vince, I had a conversation with Debbie Bonanzio today. Man, she told me you've been very hard to work with. I got to tell you, John, like, I was absolutely shocked. Like, what? Like, I worked really well with Debbie and I knew Debbie really, really well. And I was really saddened by this. And I'm thinking, what was it, a conversation? What happened? So see, bro, this is where Bruce made a mistake because he didn't know me that well. And I don't play the wrestling game. John, what do you think's the first thing I'm going to do?
Go to Debbie.
Exactly. So I go right to Debbie. I said, Debbie, man, if I offended you in any way, you know, I said, I am sorry. I'm not sure what I did. She goes, Vince, what are you talking about? And I'm like, Bruce told me that. She goes, Vince, I never had a conversation with Bruce Pritchard about you. Now I'm like, oh, okay. So, bro, I got to be honest with you. When I went to Vince's house to write television that week, I said to Vince, I'm going to lay this all out to you. I don't play politics, bro, because you know why? Playing politics is going to get in my way of doing a good job for you in writing this show. My priority should be 100% on writing this show and not dealing with bullshit politics. I don't want to deal with politics, bro. I don't care if it's the wrestling business. I don't care if it's the way of the business. I don't want to deal with it. So he's like, okay, Vince, what happened? So I laid out the exact story. Bro, from that day forward, Bruce never effed with me again. So I don't know if Vince read him the riot act. I don't know if Vince went to Debbie and said, listen, Debbie, I just want to get this all clear. But whatever Vince said to Bruce, that was the end of his politicking concerning me.
Very interesting. Bruce making stuff up. Wow, it's crazy.
But bro, that's how I found out. I mean, that's exactly how I found out. And that's when, like, I really started seeing the wrestling business for what it was.
Politics and backstabbing. So Pillman and Goldust is going to be the first match on the card. It was interesting because we talked about this. SummerSlam, Pillman loses to Goldust there. He's forced to wear a dress. Here, though, he was going to take the match. Should he lose, Marlena becomes his personal assistant. And that's what we were talking about, how they were in bed together and all this other stuff. But they actually were dating in the early 90s before Goldust and Marlena got together in real life, Dustin and Terry. So it's just interesting. Like, real life was weaving into the feud, whether you realized it or not.
I did not know, bro. I swear to God, I did not know. And I really think she thinks I was working her. I did not know, bro. I really didn't know.
Do you like the dress thing and then turning into the personal assistant thing? It just, I mean, it gives them a storyline, gives them something to do.
Just keep it going, man. If you can keep it going creatively, keep it going.
They would call this first match an indecent proposal match because if Goldust wins, Pillman has to leave the WWF. But if Pillman wins, Marlena becomes his assistant and maybe more, like we were kind of alluding to and teasing. A little bit of a twist, if you will.
Yeah. And two great characters, bro. Not to mention Terry. But again, this is what I mean, bro, about the great character matchup. I love stuff like this.
So Brian Pillman will defeat Goldust with Marlena by pinfall in 11 minutes. Thus, she becomes his servant, if you will. Interesting little thing for Pillman. And of course, he took to it and it was great. But he gets the win here and they kind of continue on with him, Goldust, and Marlena, that triangle of terror. Then the next matchup, Brian Christopher defeats Scott Putski by countout in 5 minutes. I know you're not a big fan of the lightweights, heavyweights.
I got to say this, though, bro. And I say it every time. I'm not a fan of the light heavyweights. I'm just not. But Brian Christopher was great. I mean, he was great. What a great heel. I mean, my God, did he learn so much from his dad? Every time I see Brian, he was so freaking good, man.
Was that a rib not calling him Brian Lawler? I know Brian Christopher was his name, but like pretend he's not Lawler's son. Why do they do that?
I don't know, man, because it's constant between him and Lawler. I mean, it's a constant thing.
So next up is a triple threat match. Savio Vega of Los Pericos, Farouk of the Nation of Domination, and Crush of the DOA. Savio gets the win in 11 minutes, 30 seconds, pinning Crush. I know you don't like this one.
I don't like this one at all. How did Ron Simmons not go over now?
Farouk gets nailed by Crush, and you think Crush is going to get the win. Then there's a distraction. Then Savio kicks Crush, gets the quick pin on Crush when he kind of wasn't paying attention. So it's kind of how it happens. It's almost like they made Farouk seem like he was out of it. He was on his way back up, and then Crush gets beat.
Yeah, bro, sometimes they'll look at something like that, like, you know, rewarding somebody for a good job. A win like this is telling a guy that you appreciate all his hard work.
You get Ron Simmons in, right? He's a former WCW champion. He's a great athlete, was up there for the Heisman Trophy. Great wrestler. Everybody knows who he is. And it's like, you're Farouk Asad. You're a gladiator.
Oh, my God. Yeah, horrible. The blue helmet and Sonny. And
that was weird.
I remember, bro, when some of that cringe stuff would be told to me. And I would just be like, bro, like, do you not know how freaking awful that is? Oh, God, bro.
When they switch it to the Nation, I mean, that just is a million times better.
A million times better, but still, like, I wouldn't have minded Ron Simmons, man. Like, Ron Simmons would have been great, but they were just so stuck in the past, man.
Do you think if you get rid of the cartooniness and the bright colors and like a Farouk, but if you do a gladiator gimmick with someone, do you think that could actually work?
With the right person, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it could work if written properly.
And I don't know. I didn't really like the Bariquas.
I didn't either, bro.
The next match, I guarantee you don't like either. I'm willing to bet money on it. Max Mini defeats El Torito by pinfall in 9 minutes and 20 seconds. Wow, they wasted a ton of time on a midgets match.
That's nuts, bro. And you know, again, bro, that's a deal they have with whatever company.
AAA, so
they got to put this match on. Like, but yeah, bro, that's horrible.
Awful, awful. Don't even know what to say. It was just so bad. Slaughter's, he's got the WWF commissioner, brings out Austin. Jim Ross is with him, brings out Dude Love and says, you guys have to forfeit the titles. Austin can't wrestle. So Dude Love respectfully hands over the title. Okay, you know, no problem. Austin goes, hey, you want it? Throws at Slaughter's feet. And he goes, man, I wish I could wrestle. And Jim Ross is like, yeah, I wish you could wrestle too. And Austin's like, oh, yeah? Stunner on Jim Ross. That's their best part.
That's awesome.
And then Ross doesn't come back to the announce table for the rest of the night. So selling that he got injured from Austin, the stunner. That was great. It was almost like Austin almost was better that he couldn't wrestle because he'd stunner everybody. Yeah, he beat him up. He talk trash. They do the interview from the hotel. Like, all the cool stuff with Austin, but he couldn't wrestle. So he's just beating people up.
Bro, to me, that's the fun part of creative when they're not wrestling and you're really challenged to come up with something creatively every single week. I love that stuff, bro. I thrive on that stuff.
We'll just go to the next match. The Headbangers, Mosh and Thrash, defeat the Godwins, Henry O and Phineas, the Legion of Doom, Road Warrior, Hawk, Road Warrior Animal, and Owen and the Bulldog by pinfall in a tag team four-way elimination match for the vacant WWF Tag Team Championship. The match goes 17 minutes, 20 seconds here. Kind of a cluster, kind of a lot of guys here.
This is horrible.
Not a fan of the Headbangers.
No. They were great dudes, but Owen and Bulldog were really singles wrestlers. But the other three teams, so it was Headbangers, Godwins, and LOD, because I could tell there's no story here. They had to switch the belts because of what happened to Austin. So they kind of just threw this match on there.
Owen takes the pin by Mosh here
after Steve Austin hits him with the Stone Cold Stunner.
Okay, bro, so we're just not going to book them in a match. They're going to be on the show, whether it's on color or whether it's a vignette. They just can't wrestle. Now, today, somebody gets hurt, and you don't see them till they come back and wrestle. I don't know how that happened. If you want to get somebody over, they got to be on TV every single week. And if they can't wrestle because they're hurt, creatively, you got to put them in a different spot.
After Steve Austin hits him with the Stone Cold Stunner.
Do you think that's any sort of penalty or any sort of punishment?
It sounds very much like it could be, John, which is absolutely freaking ridiculous. But yes, very much so.
Could have been anybody else.
You are right, 100%, bro.
Austin and Dude Love, despite his neck injury, where were you going with him? Were you going to lose the titles to the Headbangers? Like, you probably didn't realize where you're going with Dude Love and Steve Austin.
No. And there was never plans for the Headbangers to win the tag titles. It was organic.
So as far as the rest of the card here, Bret Hart is up next. He defends the WWF World Heavyweight Championship against the Patriot, and he wins via submission in about 19 minutes and 20 seconds here. Brett should go over, right? I mean, you're not having Patriot win the title, right?
No,
long match, you think? 20 minutes is long?
I think so. No, with Patriot?
It was very good. Probably predictably so. Maybe they could have made it shorter because you knew Brett was going to win. But Brett is awesome. You put him in there against anybody, 1-2-3 kid, Virgil, all these guys. Brett against them, he just makes them look like they have a chance, and then he pulls the rug out, and then he wins. So then we have the final match, the main event of the evening, Shawn Michaels versus The Undertaker, goes 16 minutes, 20 seconds, actually ends in a no contest. What happens is Triple H is out there, China is out there with Rick Rude as well. So it's kind of the formation of DX. They're going to interfere. They're going to do this. There's a chair involved. They knock out the one referee, then they knock out the second referee, and then I guess they feel like there's just too much interference. Undertaker then literally grabs a referee and choke slams the referee. So it's like you have no refs to have a finish, basically. Do you like that? It was a good match, really good, but there's no winner here.
It does seem like a schmoz. I don't like that finish for the end of the show.
Nobody can separate them. Then the refs get all beat up, and then the wrestlers come down and try to separate them. And you're kind of leaving Undertaker alone in the ring as Triple H, Michaels, and China all go for the exit. They all kind of run away with Undertaker in the ring. But it just doesn't seem like an end of the show. At least it feels like an end of a Raw, not an end of a pay-per-view.
I'm with you, bro. It seems that way to me. It almost seems to me like this was like, oh, God, I just hate to say it, but almost like a throwaway pay-per-view, man.
That's exactly what I was thinking, like a lead-in to something. But that's like a TV lead-in.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm not going to argue with you. That's what it feels like.
And the match was good. It was just like you felt like, wow, I paid for that.
I think if I watched that, I would have the same sentiment.
It just seems like Michaels was getting the main event, not being the champion, getting the big push up forward, and Brett was the world champion. It just seemed like he was secondary with these secondary feuds. I mean, he was doing his best and having good matches with guys like the Patriot, but it just didn't seem like main event worthy.
Then, bro, it leads me to believe, were they kind of seeing the writing on the wall that they weren't going to be able to pay him and he wasn't going to be around for the long haul, and they're kind of trying to work him back down the card? That's what it very possibly could be, bro. Vince probably knows at this point he's not going to be able to afford Brett.
Let's put him in with the Patriot. Like, yeah, you know, man, in a mid-card. Like, yeah.
I'm telling you, bro. 2 months, that's what it probably was.
So overall thoughts on the show. SummerSlam wasn't great that we were talking about, but it was better than this, I feel like.
Yeah, no, this seems like a 5, bro. Like, seriously, I was involved in it, but it seems like a 5.
If this was Raw, it'd be okay. Pay-per-view, no.
But, you know, bro, that's the thing. It's like there's always something going on. And that goes for today, too, bro, not just back then. You probably got something really, really cool and thought out, you know, really, really well. Then look what you got here. We're not going to be able to afford Brett. Austin's hurt. Bro, now you're on plan C and plan D. Like, this happens all the time.
Had to change it up, if you will.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. So let's hit the plugs. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at 2-Man Power Trip. Check out the website, tnptempire.com. Vince, what do you got?
Yes, guys. RussosBrand.com and right there, patreon.com/RussoTWC. Dozens of shows, bro. Different people on the shows. Check it out. You will be thoroughly entertained.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening. See you right back here next time for the podcast. See you then, folks.
All right, Shawn Michaels. Based upon the temperament of this capacity crowd, I would suggest that they're very much looking forward to you getting your rear end kicked by the Undertaker.
And you'd like to see that, wouldn't you? Well, guess what? I'm too jacked up to rest. Everybody knows I haven't slept in the last 13 years. I've been in this business. And I got news for you, Undertaker. I don't rest in peace for anybody. And especially you, big man. The phenom of the World Wrestling Federation, the mystique, the legend of the Undertaker is going to come to an end tonight and in your house in Louisville. Why? Because the Heartbreak Kid says so. And there's only one guy that can do it, and it's me. Why? Because I can, for God's sakes.
Today's episode of the podcast is brought to you by A Wrestling Historian. Follow A Wrestling Historian on Instagram for your latest dose of pro wrestling history. Follow A Wrestling Historian on Instagram today.